In this special edition of Minnesota Native News, we hear respected Oglala Lakota elder and education authority, Dr. Sandra Fox, talk about what schools must do to better engage Native students. This is the opening keynote speech from the National Forum on Dropout Prevention for Native and Tribal Communities, a conference at Mystic Lake Casino the week of April 26th. This conference brought together nearly 300 youth and adults working in education in 33 different states.
Bonjour, Gakanawea. Dennis Olson, Nina Dijna Kaj, Jaganashimung, Dash Bidabin Indigo, Nagajunang Ndunjaba, Makundo Dem. Good morning, Buju. Welcome to Minnesota. All right, there. I'll take it. Good morning. My name is Dennis Olson. I'm the director of the Office of Indian Education for the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm an enrolled member of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa here in Minnesota. I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming our next speaker, our featured keynote speaker for this morning. And unfortunately, like Charlene said, I'm going to make you wait because you get to see me for another minute or so. I get the pleasure to welcome up Dr. Sandra J. Fox to the podium. Dr. Fox is a member of the Oglala Lakota Nation and also has roots in Cheyenne River. Dr. Fox started teaching at public school but soon joined the Bureau of Indian Affairs and taught at Eagle Butte on Cheyenne River Reservation. Dr. Fox also told me this morning that she spent over 15 years in the Bureau of Indian Education Central Office as well. Dr. Fox received her doctor's degree in curriculum and instruction with an emphasis in teaching of reading. Her doctoral dissertation focused on utilizing Indian literature and teaching approaches recommended for Indian learners. She received the National Indian Education Association Educator of the Year Award in 1998. And the Lifetime Achievement Award in 2013. She retired from the BIA in 1999, and Dr. Fox is the author of many articles. And if you've done any research on Indian education, in your own research, your master's thesis, your doctoral thesis, you've certainly come across Dr. Fox's work and probably have utilized it extensively. I know I have. With that, I'd like to bring up Dr. Sandra J. Fox. Please put your hands together and welcome her.
Thank you, Dennis. Can you see me? The best news for me is that the lights are so bright I can't see you, so I won't know if you're sleeping or what out there. You might even get up and leave and I wouldn't even know. Thank you for having me here. Being retired, I really miss working with schools on a daily basis. And before I retired, I was working in the central office of the BIE in Washington, and I probably worked with many of your schools, and I do miss you all. The good news is that when you're retired, you have a lot of time to really think, ponder, observe, read the research, read the newspapers, watch what's going on in education, and I particularly am watching what's going on in Indian education. The bad news is that when you're retired and 70 years old like I am, you really need to rely on your notes. So forgive me for relying on my notes. I used to pride myself in giving talks without having any notes, and now, by golly, I need them so much. You just wait. You just wait. So I do have time to watch the data. The other thing that I want to say is that because I am an elder, I do not have to ask your permission or for your forgiveness for anything I say, because I pretty much can say what I want now, and I will. First of all, I'd like to shake each of your hands because I appreciate you, I respect you, I know that your work is difficult. I commend you for working with our students, especially those who are at risk, and I thank you for anyone you can help along the way. You are here because you want to decrease the number of dropouts that we have. Others have written about this problem in Indian education, and I want to share some of what they're saying. Some of you will like what I have to present, others of you may not. But I hope you will at least think about what I have to say. The good news is that we're talking about it. In fact, you may want to take notes because some of you might be able to use some of the information that I'm going to present. So hang on, because here we go. Michelle Obama recently reported that only 51% of Indian students graduate from high school, Native Indian students, as compared to 75% of the general population. And so just like here in Minnesota, we're leaving a lot of our kids behind. The State of Education for Native Students, reported by the Education Trust in 2013, stated that only 69% of Native students graduated from high school in 4 years, as compared to 83% of other students. No matter what the measure, it is not good. It is reported, though, by the Department of Education that recently our graduation rate for Native students has improved by 4.7%. So I commend you for that. Means that you are working to keep our kids in school, but we have a long ways yet to go. I'm a fan of Jim Cummins. Some of you may know his work. He probably has done more research on Indian education than any other, and I believe in what he says. And what he believes is that the learning difficulties, schooling difficulties of Indian children are the result of the way they are taught. Did you hear me? The problems that Indian children have with schooling and learning are the result of the way they are being taught. This puts the onus on us as educators. Remember that under No Child Left Behind, the mandated intervention for which was supposed to improve education dramatically was direct instruction. All students who attended Title I schools were to be taught using direct instruction. It was determined to be scientifically research or evidence-based because it followed the findings of the National Reading Panel. Direct instruction, as you know, is the process of the teacher presenting to students. And that was what it was for many years. But under No Child Left Behind, it took on a whole new dimension. It's now the process of providing teacher-directed, scripted, explicit, intensive drill for memorization, a lower form of learning, used to teach lower order skills in reading and math with commercial programs that are to be followed with fidelity. It is considered content-centered, meaning that the focus is on the content, not on the students and their differences, and it's usually a one-size-fits-all situation. This intensive direct instruction was developed in the 1960s. It is considered a deficit approach because it's based on the belief that poor children cannot learn by inquiry or self-direction and therefore need direct instruction and memorization. A deficit approach considers a group to be deficient, not ready or able to learn like others. It is, in fact, the pedagogy of the poor, if you've read that book. Direct instruction is the opposite of what the research on teaching Indian children promotes. Direct instruction is the opposite of what the research on teaching Indian children promotes. Before we talk specifically about the research on teaching Indian children, I want to mention some outcomes that have been a result of direct instruction nationally. Remember that the goal of No Child Left Behind was that all children were to be proficient by the year 2014. Do you know where we are with that today? It is now the year 2015. And according to the 2013 NAEP test, only 35% of eighth grade students in this country were proficient in reading and math. And many of the 35% were from non-Title I schools that were not mandated to use direct instruction. So I'm asking, did the intervention of direct instruction work? Not at all. The U.S. Department of Education funded its own study of direct instruction during 2003 to 2007. The final report stated that direct instruction did increase decoding skills, but did not have any statistically significant impact on reading comprehension. We see that in our Indian schools as well. Many, many of our children can sound out the words, but don't know what they're reading. Most schools that have used direct instruction have found that gains are made at first, but this memorization approach produces superficial learning, and gains don't last. So when I go visit schools, I see their charts showing gain. Every school has these charts all over their walls showing gain from direct instruction. But if they're making so much gain, how come we're not seeing it overall? Think of yourselves memorizing something for a test in college. Do you remember those things you memorized today? That's what we're doing to our children, having them memorize. I've heard of many programs that schools thought were the silver bullet. Oh my, look at what our kids are doing. Only to discard those programs later. We actually did direct instruction back in the 70s in Indian schools. It didn't work then, and it is not working now. The other interesting thing is that commercial programs claim they are scientifically research-based if they follow the research being promoted by the federal government, whatever that is at the time. And when research is applied to them directly, however, they are found not to have proof of effectiveness. There is a website called the What Works Clearinghouse, which is the United States Department of Education function. It tells you the effectiveness of the various programs. For example, corrective reading, which many of our Indian schools have used, a direct instruction program, according to the What Works Clearinghouse, was found to have no discernible effects on phonics, reading fluency, or comprehension. There were no studies of corrective math reported, indicating that no studies met the standards for scientific research. So, those programs that are called scientifically research-based really don't have, most of them don't have the studies behind them to prove that they are effective. It's been the biggest, in my opinion, way to influence people's thinking about education by using the term scientific research-based in this situation. I encourage all of you to go to the What Works Clearinghouse to see if the programs you're using do have the research behind them. It is now also recognized that dropping other classes besides reading and math, including social studies and science, was a mistake. As students learn a great deal of vocabulary from them, they can provide math and language arts application, and they motivate students to come to school. Even the U.S. Secretary of Education, Duncan, stated, "The law is too restrictive and has led to a narrowing of the curriculum and things that are good for children and ultimately for our country." All across the country, schools are now scrambling to add back in social studies, science, music, and art. In Albuquerque, there was an article in the paper the other day about how music has helped students so much in gaining achievement, and they're considering adding it back into all schools. And at the lower grades, music and art are now being tied again to real social studies and real science classes. The results of the NAEP assessment pointed out that direct instruction did not work. But it also pointed out that our kids now could not think critically. So like sailors on a sinking ship, we now run from the lower order skills directly to higher order skills and expecting you to be there by tomorrow. You all know that Common Core standards do provide us with things that our kids need to know. They need to think critically. They need to be able to write. They need to do all of the things that kids in prep schools do. But asking you to do that in overnight is kind of insane. But I do hope that we do continue on that path. Even though the Common Core standards, because of the political part of it, may go away, I still think we need to teach our children to think critically, to solve problems, to write and do research. Now to actually what the Indian research says about direct instruction. According to the Culturally Responsive Schooling for Indigenous Youth, a review of the literature published by AERA, a major concern is that the emphasis on testing and the mandate for the utilization of direct instruction for poor children under No Child Left Behind has not provided effective instruction for Indian children. It is mostly opposite of what is recommended for them. Studies show that when curriculum and instruction are aligned with the students' cultures, academic achievement usually improves. The facts are. The State of Education for Native Students, reported by the Education Trust, indicates that the academic achievement of Indian children showed no statistically significant improvement under No Child Left Behind from 2005 to 2011. And according to the NAEP assessment, only 18% of fourth grade Native students scored at the proficient and advanced levels. BIE students scored the lowest of all groups identified. According to the 2013 NAEP, only 20% of eighth grade students were proficient and advanced in reading and math. Remember, that's compared to 35% of all students, but even that is a terrible statistic. As I visit schools and go around and see them using direct instruction, I see students who are not engaged and are in fact totally bored. Is it any wonder they're dropping out of school? The National Reading Panel did not address any research on motivating children to read. Thus, we focused on teaching them to read, but not motivating them to read. Students get better at reading by reading and reading on their own especially. The report also did not address any issues relevant to second language learners, including the impacts of various cultures and learning styles. Indian children in general are not proficient in either English or their native language. You know this, especially in regard to academic language. Over the years, their scores in vocabulary and comprehension have always been the lowest. And I tracked the BIE's achievement scores for many, many years, so I've watched this continuously. But instead of focusing on vocabulary and comprehension, under No Child Left Behind, we focused on phonics and fluency. And vocabulary and comprehension were not stressed at the lower grades where the ability for language learning is greatest. A report from the U.S. Department of Education states that at grades 4 and 8 in this country, students have gained only one score point in vocabulary from 2011, and 12th grade students have made no gains in vocabulary since 2009. Vocabulary, of course, is important for students to learn to read as well as to live in this world, and yet we're not focusing or doing anything that's improving that area. As I stated, comprehension and vocabulary were always the lowest subtest scores. We should have focused on those areas instead of only phonics. Jim Cummins, as I said, is my hero. He recently mentioned that when you're using direct instruction with Indian children, you're confining them to a passive role, and this induces in them a form of learned helplessness. With our dismal statistics in education and our growing suicide rates, the last thing we need to do is to make our children helpless. They need to be able to think critically, solve problems in their daily lives, and not be treated that they can't learn as well as others. Intensive direct instruction is the opposite of what is recommended for Indian children. It provides skills-based part-to-whole instruction rather than meaning-based whole-to-part. It does not recognize our reflective information processing and was all about how quickly students could respond. Research studies have indicated that Indian children in general are global learners, preferring to work from a meaningful big picture to the details. Our reflective information processors preferring to take time to think before responding. Our visual learners preferring to be shown rather than only told, and preferring to work with others rather than alone. Further, native teaching methods align more to guided inquiry than to direct instruction, yet none of this information has been used in the effort to improve the achievement of Indian students. There were two studies done about the same time No Child Left Behind was enacted. One was the National Reading Panel report that promoted direct instruction. The other was a report, How People Learn, by the National Research Council, which promoted a more student-centered, meaning-based approach. But the United States government chose to go with a National Reading Panel report and direct instruction. But there is research out there that promotes inquiry and cultural integration also. How People Learn says this: teaching strategies must be culturally appropriate. Teachers must utilize their students' prior knowledge, ideas, beliefs, experience, interests, backgrounds, preferences, attitudes, skills, and use of language to help them present new instructional content. Relevant knowledge and appropriate instruction help people organize information in ways that support their abilities to remember and engage in critical thinking. Teachers must help students with understanding by organizing their learning around big main ideas of the subject area. Learning with understanding is more likely to promote transfer than simply memorizing information. There must be connections between the school, the community, and the students' home practices and values. School failure may be partly explained by the mismatch between what schools have learned in their home cultures and what is required of them at school. Right now, even with the change to the Common Core, commercial instructional programs are to be research evidence-based, require that teachers read scripts, and are to be followed with fidelity. Well, a little levity here. I call fidelity the other F word. This eliminates the teacher from providing any relevant examples and application of learning for students. State departments and the Bureau of Indian Education liked direct instruction because they did not trust teachers to do a good job. Do you all realize that? One of the reasons direct instruction was promoted was that at the time, and maybe even still now, teachers were not trusted to do a good job. Therefore, you were given as teachers, scripts to follow, and to have fidelity to programs developed by somebody somewhere who doesn't even know your kids. I'm here to tell you that there is no program out there that will do what needs to be done to truly improve the achievement of our Indian students. I get calls all the time, what program do you recommend? I don't recommend any programs. If you have a program, I suggest that you use it because they're expensive, except do not use those real strict direct instruction programs. The new Common Core programs are probably what you're going to be using, but they all need to be adapted or supplemented in order to meet the needs of your students. That's why I call fidelity the other F word. I have four major recommendations for adapting or supplementing instruction for Indian students. First of all, we've got to address language development. Under No Child Left Behind, the practices used really did not promote language development. In fact, they hampered it. The policy of the federal government has not only impacted our native languages, but it's also now impacted not being able to learn English very well. Thematic units, which provide a big picture and a meaningful context for language activities, are most often recommended for Indian students to help them expand vocabulary, improve reading and writing, and reorganize. So I recommend that you reorganize your reading and literature selections into meaningful themes, such as the natural world, growing up, adventure. Organize those selections into meaningful themes. Then explore the language of that theme with your students. Add Indian literature to the theme. Do critical writing, thinking, research on the theme. Research also strongly shows that language development in one language helps the acquisition of a second language. Schools need to truly begin to restore our local native languages, and this can also be done through thematic units. Acknowledge that this will also assist English language development. We need to really, really focus on language development in both native and English. Have person-to-person discussions around all of this. I know many of you use computer-based programs, which cannot provide the person-to-person discussions which our Indian students need. So that's the first recommendation, is to address language development. The second major recommendation I have is to provide culture and language integration. The requirement for the use of scientifically researched or evidence-based programs has made instruction for Indian students more irrelevant than ever. Teachers have had to read program scripts, aren't allowed to include local examples or content that might help to explain concepts. Examples of how Indian people, past and present, have utilized science and math would make instruction much more meaningful. Our children need to learn that Indian people developed corn, one of the greatest genetic engineering feats ever accomplished. Our children need to know that Indian people developed the medicines we still use today. Our children need to know that Indian people had vast star knowledge. Information on Indian history tied to American history and world history would make that study more important. Indian literature would motivate Indian students to read, write, and think critically. Students would better learn science, social studies, math, and language arts. These things, taught with native language instruction, would be powerful. Schools should provide the inclusion of language and culture in all instruction, and realize that doing so will increase general academic achievement. Too many times, those are seen as extras in the curriculum or separate in the curriculum when they need to be right in the regular classrooms. As I have been developing a curriculum across Indian country, I am always amazed at how our own stories tie so well to the standards, to the social studies and science standards. You need to resurrect, if you have to, your own stories and see that they fit nicely into the regular curriculum. That's the second major recommendation, then, is to incorporate language and culture. The third major recommendation I have is to utilize cultural pedagogy. Many researchers, native and non-native, and tribal elders have pointed out that Indian children are not taught the way they learn. Schools must recognize that there are Indian learning styles and that Indian students, like all students, need language-rich, relevant, engaging, challenging curriculum, not the deficit, low expectations, drill and kill of intensive direct instruction. I encourage you to go to the CREED, CREEDE, the Center for Research on Excellence, Diversity, or Education Diversity and Excellence, now put up on the University of Hawaii website, to see what are called the 7 standards for effective pedagogy, which were developed for Indian students but now utilized in Hawaii, where they are usually very successful. Those standards indicate which 7 things that seem to work well to motivate Indian children to learn. It says they are approved by the What Works Clearinghouse Review also. So here you have some research that is recognized that you can use, as well as the research from the How People Learn study. I'll quickly mention the 7 standards if I have time here. So do I see you back there? Okay. The 7 standards are, 1, guess, language development in both English and native languages. Provide opportunities to communicate around meaningful topics and themes. The 2nd recommendation, connect school to student lives. Use examples and instruction from their cultures, both past and present. I always say basketball is a part of our culture. Their literature, their traditional stories, and recognize and accommodate for native ways of knowing, their holistic global cognitive style. Provide challenging activities. Teach complex thinking. Teach higher order thinking skills through examples from their own worlds, and acknowledge and honor their reflective information processing in which they take time to think before responding. Our people are thinkers, and that aspect has been totally ignored under our direct instruction approach. Joint productive activity, 4. Utilize cooperative learning activities and teachers learning and producing with students. Interestingly enough, our Indian children love it when the teacher acts like a student with them. And they especially like it when the teacher makes a mistake and they can correct them. So keep that in mind. Our students love it when the teachers act like students with them. 5, teaching through conversation. Our children, our people, are visitors. If you lecture to them, which is a form of direct instruction, they're probably not paying a bit of attention. But if you visit with them, have more informal conversations with them about what you're trying to teach them, and teach them through informal conversation, you will get further. Use of modeling and demonstration, number 6, is especially important for students who have limited language proficiency and is tied to the visual learning style and holistic global style, modeling and demonstrating. Before you ask them to do something, you model it, show them how you do it, demonstrate. And the 7th one is student-directed learning. Provide opportunities for choice and have the students direct their own learning in as much as possible. Indian students are more comfortable and motivated to participate in activities that they themselves generate or organize. Those are the 7 recommendations that after this center, Creed, studied Indian education for a long time, watched classrooms, read what others had to say, and put together these 7 standards. The last of the 4 major recommendations I have are to address the basic needs of our kids. You know, under No Child Left Behind, when it first started, the mantra was no excuses. Do you remember that? No excuses. What that really meant was don't pay attention to the fact that these kids have other needs. Don't pay attention to any of that because that will cost money. Just go ahead and teach them without regard to any of those things. Well, you remember or know about the Kids Count report. It outlines disparities regarding meeting the basic needs of Indian students that affect learning. On a scale of 1 to 1,000, based on 12 indicators that affect student success, including reading and math proficiency, high school graduation, neighborhood poverty levels, white children rated 704, Latino children 404, American Indian children, 387. South Dakota Indian children, 185. The lowest score for any group in any state. Schools have been given little support in meeting the social, emotional, and cultural and economic needs of their students, although I know schools are trying. Dr. Karen Swisher Como, Indian education leader from Standing Rock, tells me that the potential dropouts need at least one person to be interested in them in school. Even one person. In Albuquerque, 25% of high school students are truant on any given day. Social workers hired this last year have helped to decrease the truancy rate by 13%. I am saddened, though, when I hear of our Indian schools encouraging students to drop out and take the GED because their test scores might lower the school's overall ratings. Those of us who supposedly have made it tend to forget those we left behind. The real test is not test scores, but what will become of students in the real world? You know that it is not a good picture right now in Indian country. Schools must use the local cultural values and as the basis for counseling and wellness activities that they provide. And if you're holding up your hand, I can hardly see you back there. Okay, all right, thank you. We really need to rethink the purpose of education. A recent article questioned, is education only to raise test scores? Or what about some of these other things? Over the years, we've had waves of the purpose of education. One of the waves was, is it to teach about democracy and democratic values? Well, obviously, that's not what it is now, because our kids don't seem to have many civil rights. They're ordered to seat time. They learn little about government. Or is it to impart practical life skills? Life skills are almost completely absent from our schools. It's all about raising the reading and math test scores. Is it about promoting caring people? Obviously not, because the main focus is obedience to authority, obedience to direct instruction, obedience and bullying. Is it about empowering our students through intellectual development to pursue their own paths? It hasn't been that way because we don't even allow self-directed learning until now. Hopefully, with Common Core, or at least that emphasis. Or is it what one definition of education says, to perpetuate a culture? Is that the purpose of education? If that's the purpose of education in our Indian schools, that is not what's happening, because we don't allow our cultures to be included in classrooms, because they're not research-based, or because they would interfere with fidelity to programs. Raising test scores the way we are now doing it does not equate to educated people. An article in the Albuquerque Journal on Friday was entitled, "Fix Education by Respecting Learning." It stated, at some stage, the steady accumulation of failure, waste, and frustration must reach a tipping point. At some stage, a critical mass of people must realize that what we are doing is the popular definition of insanity. I pray that you will be part of the critical mass. Our children need an education not only to address their heads, but to address their hearts. Thank you.
This is Minnesota Native News.
Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.